"That I may reply," said Don Quixote, "that Dulcinea is the daughter of her own works, and that virtues rectify blood, and that lowly virtue is more to be regarded and esteemed than exalted vice. Dulcinea, besides, has that within her that may raise her to be a crowned and sceptred queen, for the merit of a fair and virtuous woman is capable of performing greater miracles. And virtually, though not formally, she has herself in higher fortunes."
"I protest, Señor Don Quixote," said the duchess, "that in all you say you go most cautiously and lead in hand, as the saying is. Henceforth I will believe myself, and I will take care that everyone in my house believes, even my lord the duke if needs be, that there is a Dulcinea in El Toboso, and that she is living to-day, and that she is beautiful and nobly born, and deserves to have such a knight as Señor Don Quixote in her service, and that is the highest praise that it is in my power to give her, or that I can think of. But I cannot help entertaining a doubt, and having a certain grudge against Sancho Panza. The doubt is this, that the aforesaid history declares that the said Sancho Panza, when he carried a letter on your worship's behalf to the said Lady Dulcinea, found her sifting a sack of wheat, and more by token, it says it was red wheat, a thing which makes me doubt the loftiness of her lineage."
To this Don Quixote made answer, "Señora, your highness must know that everything, or almost everything that happens me, transcends the ordinary limits of what happens to other knights-errant, whether it be that it is directed by the inscrutable will of destiny or by the malice of some jealous enchanter. Now, it is an established fact that all or most famous knights-errant have some special gift, one that of being proof against enchantment, another that of being made of such invulnerable flesh that he cannot be wounded, as was the famous Roland, one of the 12 peers of France, of whom it is related that he could not be wounded except in the sole of his left foot, and that it must be with the point of a stout pin, and not with any other sort of weapon whatever. And so, when Bernardo del Carpio slew him at Roncesvalles, finding that he could not wound him with steel, he lifted him up from the ground in his arms and strangled him, calling to mind seasonably the death which Hercules inflicted on Antaeus, the fierce giant that they say was the son of Terra. I would infer from what I have mentioned that perhaps I may have some gift of this kind, not that of being invulnerable, because experience has many times proved to me that I am of tender flesh and not at all impenetrable, nor that of being proof against enchantment, for I have already seen myself thrust into a cage in which all the world would not have been able to confine me except by force of enchantment. But as I delivered myself from that one, I am inclined to believe that there is no other that can hurt me. And so these enchanters, seeing that they cannot exert their vile craft against my person, revenge themselves on what I love most, and seek to rob me of life by maltreating that of Dulcinea in whom I live. And therefore I am convinced that when my squire carried my message to her, they changed her into a common peasant girl, engaged in such a mean occupation as sifting wheat. I have already said, however, that that wheat was not red wheat, nor wheat at all, but grains of Orient pearl. And as a proof of all this, I must tell your highnesses that coming to El Toboso a short time back, I was altogether unable to discover the palace of Dulcinea, and that the next day, though Sancho, my squire, saw her in her own proper shape, which is the fairest in the world, to me she appeared to be a coarse, ill-favoured farm wench, and by no means a well-spoken one, she who is propriety itself. And so, as I am not, and, so far as one can judge, cannot be enchanted, she it is that is enchanted, that is smitten, that is altered, changed, and transformed. In her have my enemies revenged themselves upon me, and for her shall I live in ceaseless tears until I see her in her pristine state. I have mentioned this, lest anybody should mind what Sancho said about Dulcinea's winnowing or sifting, for as they changed her to me, it is no wonder if they changed her to him. Dulcinea is illustrious and well-born, and of one of the gentle families of El Toboso, which are many, ancient and good. Therein, most assuredly, not small is the share of the peerless Dulcinea, through whom her town will be famous and celebrated in ages to come, as Troy was through Helen and Spain through La Cava, though with a better title and tradition. For another thing, I would have your graces understand that Sancho Panza
is one of the drollest squires that ever served knight-errant. Sometimes there is a simplicity about him so acute that it is an amusement to try and make out whether he is simple or sharp. He has mischievous tricks that stamp him rogue, and blundering ways that prove him a booby. He doubts everything and believes everything. When I fancy he is on the point of coming down headlong from sheer stupidity, he comes out with something shrewd that sends him up to the skies. After all, I would not exchange him for another squire, though I were given a city to boot. And therefore, I am in doubt whether it will be well to send him to the government your Highness has bestowed upon him, though I perceive in him a certain aptitude for the work of governing, so that, with a little trimming of his understanding, he would manage any government as easily as the king does his taxes. And, moreover, we know already from ample experience that it does not require much cleverness or much learning to be a governor, for there are 100 round about us that scarcely know how to read and govern like gerfalcons. The main point is that they should have good intentions, and be desirous of doing right in all things, for they will never be at a loss for persons to advise and direct them in what they have to do, like those knight governors who, being no lawyers, pronounce sentences with the aid of an assessor. My advice to him will be to take no bribe and surrender no right, and I have some other little matters in reserve that shall be produced in due season for Sancho's benefit and the advantage of the island he is to govern. The Duke, Duchess, and Don Quixote had reached this point in their conversation when they heard voices and a great hubbub in the palace, and Sancho burst abruptly into the room, all glowing with anger, with a dishcloth by way of a bib, and followed by several servants, or, more properly speaking, kitchen boys and other underlings, one of whom carried a small trough full of water, that from its colour and impurity was plainly dishwater. The one with the trough pursued him and followed him everywhere he went, endeavouring with the utmost persistence to thrust it under his chin, while another kitchen boy seemed anxious to wash his beard. "What is all this, brothers?" asked the Duchess. "What is it? What do you want to do to this good man? Do you forget? He is a governor-elect." To which the barber kitchen boy replied, "The gentleman will not let himself be washed as is customary, and as my lord and the señor his master have been." "Yes, I will," said Sancho, in a great rage, "but I'd like it to be with cleaner towels, cleaner soap, and not such dirty hands, for there's not so much difference between me and my master that he should be washed with angel's water and I with devil's soap. The customs of countries and princes' palaces are only good so long as they give no annoyance, but the way of washing they have here is worse than doing penance. I have a clean beard, and I don't require to be refreshed in that fashion, and whoever comes to wash me or touch a hair of my head, I mean to say my beard, with all due respect be it said, I'll give him a punch that will leave my fist sunk in his skull, for ceremonies and soapings of this sort are more like jokes than the polite attentions of one's host." The Duchess was ready to die with laughter when she saw Sancho's rage and heard his words, but it was no pleasure to Don Quixote to see him in such a sorry trim, with the dingy towel about him and the hangers-on of the kitchen all around him. So making a low bow to the Duke and Duchess, as if to ask their permission to speak, he addressed the rout in a dignified tone. "Hola, gentlemen! You let that youth alone, and go back to where you came from, or anywhere else, if you like. My squire is as clean as any other person, and those troughs are as bad as narrow, thin-necked jars to him. Take my advice and leave him alone, for neither he nor I understand joking." Sancho took the word out of his mouth and went on, "Nay, let them come and try their jokes on the country bumpkin, for it's about as likely I'll stand them as that it's now midnight. Let them bring me a comb here, or what they please, and curry this beard of mine, and if they get anything out of it that offends against cleanliness, let them clip me to the skin." Upon this, the Duchess, laughing all the while, said, "Sancho Panza is right, and always will be in all he says. He is clean, and, as he says himself, he does not require to be washed, and if our ways do not please him, he is free to choose. Besides, you promoters of cleanliness have been excessively careless and thoughtless, I don't know if I ought not to say audacious, to bring troughs and wooden utensils and kitchen dishcloths, instead of basins and jugs of pure gold and towels of Holland to such a person and such a beard. But, after all, you are ill-conditioned and ill-bred, and, spiteful as you are, you cannot help showing the grudge you have against the squires of knights-errant." The impudent servitors, and even the seneschal who came with them, took the Duchess to be speaking in earnest, so they removed the straining cloth from Sancho's neck, and with something like shame and confusion of face, went off all of them and left him. whereupon he, seeing himself safe out of that extreme danger, as it seemed to him, ran and fell on his knees before the Duchess, saying, "From great ladies great favours may be looked for. This which your Grace has done me today cannot be requited with less than wishing I was dubbed a knight-errant to devote myself all the days of my life to the service of so exalted a lady. I am a labouring man. My name is Sancho Panza. I am married, I have children, and I am serving as a squire. If in any one of these ways I can serve your Highness, I will not be longer in obeying than your Grace in commanding." "It is easy to see, Sancho," replied the Duchess, "that you have learned to be polite in the school of politeness itself. I mean to say, it is easy to see that you have been nursed in the bosom of Señor Don Quixote, who is, of course, the cream of good breeding and flower of ceremony, or cerimony, as you would say yourself. Fair be the fortunes of such a master and such a servant, the one the cynosure of knight-errantry, the other the star of squirely fidelity. Rise, Sancho, my friend. I will repay your courtesy by taking care that my lord the Duke makes good to you the promised gift of the government as soon as possible." With this, the conversation came to an end, and Don Quixote retired to take his midday sleep. But the Duchess begged Sancho, unless he had a very great desire to go to sleep, to come and spend the afternoon with her and her damsels in a very cool chamber. Sancho replied that, though he certainly had the habit of sleeping 4 or 5 hours in the heat of the day in summer, to serve Her Excellence he would try with all his might not to sleep even one that day, and that he would come in obedience to her command. And with that he went off. The Duke gave fresh orders with respect to treating Don Quixote as a knight-errant, without departing even in the smallest particular from the style in which, as the stories tell us, they used to treat the knights of old. Part 3. Chapter 33. Of the delectable discourse which the Duchess and her damsels held with Sancho Panza, well worth reading and noting. The history records that Sancho did not sleep that afternoon, but in order to keep his word came, before he had well done dinner, to visit the Duchess, who, finding enjoyment in listening to him, made him sit down beside her on a low seat, though Sancho, out of pure good breeding, wanted not to sit down. The Duchess, however, told him he was to sit down as governor and talk as squire, as in both respects he was worthy of even the chair of the Cid Ruy Diaz, the campeador. Sancho shrugged his shoulders, obeyed, and sat down, and all the Duchess's damsels and duennas gathered round him, waiting in profound silence to hear what he would say. It was the Duchess, however, who spoke first, saying, "Now that we are alone, and that there is nobody here to overhear us, I should be glad if the Señor Governor would relieve me of certain doubts I have, rising out of the history of the great Don Quixote that is now in print. One is, inasmuch as worthy Sancho never saw Dulcinea, I mean the Lady Dulcinea del Toboso, nor took Don Quixote's letter to her, for it was left in the memorandum book in the Sierra Morena, how did he dare to invent the answer and all that about finding her sifting wheat, the whole story being a deception and falsehood? And so much to the prejudice of the peerless Dulcinea's good name, a thing that is not at all becoming the character and fidelity of a good squire." At these words, Sancho, without uttering one in reply, got up from his chair, and with noiseless steps, with his body bent and his finger on his lips, went all round the room, lifting up the hangings. And this done, he came back to his seat and said, "Now, Señora, that I have seen that there is no one except the bystanders listening to us on the sly, I will answer what you have asked me, and all you may ask me, without fear or dread. And the first thing I have got to say is that, for my own part, I hold my master Don Quixote to be stark mad, though sometimes he says things that, to my mind, and indeed everybody's that listens to him, are so wise and run in such a straight furrow that Satan himself could not have said them better. But for all that, really and beyond all question, it's my firm belief he is cracked. Well then, as this is clear to my mind, I can venture to make him believe things that have neither head nor tail, like that affair of the answer to the letter, and that other of 6 or 8 days ago, which is not yet in history, that is to say, the affair of the enchantment of my lady Dulcinea. For I made him believe she is enchanted, though there's no more truth in it than over the hills of Úbeda." The Duchess begged him to tell her about the enchantment or deception, so Sancho told the whole story exactly as it had happened, and his hearers were not a little amused by it. And then, resuming, the Duchess said, In consequence of what worthy Sancho has told me, a doubt starts up in my mind, and there comes a kind of whisper to my ear that says, if Don Quixote be mad, crazy, and cracked, and Sancho Panza his squire knows it, and notwithstanding serves and follows him and goes trusting to his empty promises, there can be no doubt he must be still madder and sillier than his master. And that being so, it will be cast in your teeth, Señora Duchess, if you give the said Sancho an island to govern. For how will he who does not know how to govern himself know how to govern others?
By God, Señora, said Sancho, but that doubt comes timely. But your grace may say it out and speak plainly, or as you like, for I know what you say is true, and if I were wise, I should have left my master long ago. But this was my fate. This was my bad luck. I can't help it. I must follow him. We're from the same village. I've eaten his bread. I'm fond of him. I'm grateful. He gave me his ass-colts. And above all, I'm faithful. So it's quite impossible for anything to separate us, except the pickaxe and shovel. And if your highness does not like to give me the government you promised, God made me without it, and maybe your not giving it to me will be all the better for my conscience. For, fool as I am, I know the proverb, for her own hurt, the ant got wings, and it may be that Sancho the squire will get to heaven sooner than Sancho the governor. They make as good bread here as in France, and by night all cats are grey, and a hard case enough his, who hasn't broken his fast at 2 in the afternoon, and there's no stomach a hand's breadth bigger than another, and the same can be filled with straw or hay, as the saying is, and the little birds of the field have God for their purveyor and caterer. And 4 yards of Quaker frieze keep one warmer than 4 of Segovia broadcloth. And when we quit this world and are put underground, the prince travels by as narrow a path as the journeyman, and the pope's body does not take up more feet of earth than the sacristan's, for all that the one is higher than the other. For when we go to our graves, we all pack ourselves up and make ourselves small, or rather they pack us up and make us small in spite of us, and then good night to us. And I say once more, if your ladyship does not like to give me the island because I'm a fool, like a wise man, I will take care to give myself no trouble about it. I have heard say that behind the cross there's the devil, and that all that glitters is not gold, and that from among the oxen and the ploughs and the yokes, Wamba the husbandman was taken to be made king of Spain, and from among brocades and pleasures and riches, Roderick was taken to be devoured by adders, if the verses of the old ballads don't lie.
To be sure they don't lie, exclaimed Doña Rodriguez, the duenna, who was one of the listeners. Why, there's a ballad that says they put King Rodrigo alive into a tomb full of toads and adders and lizards, and that 2 days afterwards the king, in a plaintive, feeble voice, cried out from within the tomb, "They gnaw me now, they gnaw me now, there where I most did sin." And according to that, the gentleman has good reason to say he would rather be a labouring man than a king if vermin are to eat him.
The Duchess could not help laughing at the simplicity of her duenna, or wondering at the language and proverbs of Sancho, to whom she said, "Worthy Sancho knows very well that when once a knight has made a promise, he strives to keep it, though it should cost him his life. My lord and husband the Duke, though not one of the errant sort, is none the less a knight for that reason, and will keep his word about the promised island in spite of the envy and malice of the world. Let Sancho be of good cheer. For when he least expects it, he will find himself seated on the throne of his island and seat of dignity, and will take possession of his government that he may discard it for another of 3 bordered brocade. The charge I give him is to be careful how he governs his vassals, bearing in mind that they are all loyal and well-born. As to governing them well, said Sancho, there's no need of charging me to do that, for I'm kind-hearted by nature, and full of compassion for the poor. There's no stealing the loaf from him who kneads and bakes. And by my faith, it won't do to throw false dice with me. I am an old dog, and I won't be fooled by a crust. I can be wide awake if need be, and I don't let clouds come before my eyes, for I know where the shoe pinches me. I say so, because with me the good will have support and protection, and the bad neither footing nor access. And it seems to me that in governments to make a beginning is everything. And maybe, after having been governor a fortnight, I'll take kindly to the work and know more about it than the field labour I've been brought up to.
You are right, Sancho, said the Duchess, for no one is born ready taught, and the bishops are made out of men and not out of stones. But to return to the subject we were discussing just now, the enchantment of the Lady Dulcinea.
I look upon it as certain, and something more than evident, that Sancho's idea of practising a deception upon his master, making him believe that the peasant girl was Dulcinea, and that if he did not recognise her, it must be because she was enchanted, was all a device of one of the enchanters that persecute Don Quixote. For in truth and earnest, I know from good authority that the coarse country wench who jumped up on the ass was and is Dulcinea del Toboso, and that worthy Sancho, though he fancies himself the deceiver, is the one that is deceived, and that there is no more reason to doubt the truth of this than of anything else we never saw. A Señor Sancho Panza must know that we too have enchanters here that are well disposed to us, and tell us what goes on in the world plainly and distinctly, without subterfuge or deception. And believe me, Sancho, that agile country lass was and is Dulcinea del Toboso, who is as much enchanted as the mother that bore her. And when we least expect it, we shall see her in her own proper form, and then Sancho will be disabused of the error he is under at present. All that's very possible, said Sancho Panza. And now I'm willing to believe what my master says about what he saw in the cave of Montesinos, where he says he saw the lady Dulcinea del Toboso in the very same dress and apparel that I said I had seen her in when I enchanted her all to please myself. It must be all exactly the other way, as your ladyship says, because it is impossible to suppose that out of my poor wit such a cunning trick could be concocted in a moment, nor do I think my master is so mad that by my weak and feeble persuasion he could be made to believe a thing so out of all reason. But, Señora, your excellence must not therefore think me ill-disposed, for a dolt like me is not bound to see into the thoughts and plots of those vile enchanters. I invented all that to escape my master's scolding, and not with any intention of hurting him, and if it has turned out differently, there is a God in heaven who judges our hearts.
That is true, said the Duchess.
But tell me, Sancho, what is this you say about the cave of Montesinos? For I should like to know.
Sancho, upon this, related to her, word for word, what has been said already touching that adventure, and having heard it, the Duchess said,
From this occurrence it may be inferred that, as the great Don Quixote says he saw there the same country wench Sancho saw on the way from El Toboso, it is no doubt Dulcinea, and that there are some very active and exceedingly busy enchanters about.
So I say, said Sancho, and if my lady Dulcinea is enchanted, so much the worse for her, and I'm not going to pick a quarrel with my master's enemies, who seem to be many and spiteful. The truth is that the one I saw was a country wench, and I set her down to be a country wench, and if that was Dulcinea, it must not be laid at my door, nor should I be called to answer for it, or take the consequences. But they must go nagging me at every step. Sancho said it, Sancho did it, Sancho here, Sancho there, as if Sancho was nobody at all, and not that same Sancho Panza that's now going all over the world in books, so Samson Carrasco told me, and he's at any rate one that's a bachelor of Salamanca. And people of that sort can't lie, except when the whim seizes them, or they have some very good reason for it. So there's no occasion for anybody to quarrel with me. And then I have a good character, and as I have heard my master say, a good name is better than great riches. Let them only stick me into this government, and they'll see wonders, for one who has been a good squire will be a good governor.
All worthy Sancho's observations, said the Duchess, are Catonian sentences, or at any rate, out of the very heart of Michael Verino himself, who florentibus occidit annis. In fact, to speak in his own style, under a bad cloak there's often a good drinker.
Indeed, Señora, said Sancho, I never yet drank out of wickedness. From thirst I have very likely, for I have nothing of the hypocrite in me. I drink when I'm inclined, or, if I'm not inclined, when they offer it to me, so as not to look either straight-laced or ill-bred. For when a friend drinks one's health, what heart can be so hard as not to return it? But if I put on my shoes, I don't dirty them. Besides, squires tonight's errant mostly drink water, for they are always wandering among woods, forests, and meadows, mountains, and crags, without a drop of wine to be had if they gave their eyes for it.
So I believe, said the Duchess. And now, let Sancho go and take his sleep, and we will talk by and by at greater length, and settle how he may soon go and stick himself into the government, as he says.
Sancho once more kissed the Duchess's hand, and entreated her to let good care be taken of his Dapple, for he was the light of his eyes.
"What is Dapple?" said the Duchess.
"My ass," said Sancho, "which, not to mention him by that name, I'm accustomed to call Dapple.
I begged this Lady Duenna here to take care of him when I came into the castle, and she got as angry as if I had said she was ugly or old, though it ought to be more natural and proper for duennas to feed asses than to ornament chambers. God bless me, what a spite a gentleman of my village had against these ladies!
"He must have been some clown," said Doña Rodriguez the duenna, "for if he had been a gentleman and well-born, he would have exalted them higher than the horns of the moon."
"That will do," said the Duchess. "No more of this. Hush, Doña Rodriguez, and let Señor Panza rest easy and leave the treatment of Dapple in my charge, for, as he is a treasure of Sancho's, I'll put him in the apple of my eye."
"It will be enough for him to be in the stable," said Sancho,
"for neither he nor I are worthy to rest a moment in the apple of your Highness's eye, and I'd as soon stab myself as consent to it. For though my master says that in civilities it is better to lose by a card too many than a card too few, when it comes to civilities to asses, we must mind what we are about and keep within due bounds."
"Take him to your government, Sancho," said the Duchess, "and there you will be able to make as much of him as you like, and even release him from work and pension him off."
"Don't think, Señora Duchess, that you have said anything absurd," said Sancho. "I have seen more than two asses go to governments, and for me to take mine with me would be nothing new."
Sancho's words made the Duchess laugh again, and gave her fresh amusement, and dismissing him to sleep she went away to tell the Duke the conversation she had had with him. And between them they plotted and arranged to play a joke upon Don Quixote that was to be a rare one and entirely in knight-errantry style. And in that same style they practised several upon him, so much in keeping and so clever that they form the best adventures this great history contains. Chapter 34, which relates how they learned the way in which they were to disenchant the peerless Dulcinea del Toboso, which is one of the rarest adventures in this book. Great was the pleasure the Duke and Duchess took in the conversation of Don Quixote and Sancho Panza, and more bent than ever upon the plan they had of practising some jokes upon them that should have the look and appearance of adventures, they took as their basis of action what Don Quixote had already told them about the cave of Montesinos, in order to play him a famous one. But what the Duchess marvelled at above all was that Sancho's simplicity could be so great as to make him believe as absolute truth that Dulcinea had been enchanted, when it was he himself who had been the enchanter and trickster in the business. Having therefore instructed their servants in everything they were to do, 6 days afterwards they took him out to hunt, with as great a retinue of huntsmen and beaters as a crowned king. They presented Don Quixote with a hunting suit, and Sancho with another of the finest green cloth, but Don Quixote declined to put his on, saying that he must soon return to the hard pursuit of arms and could not carry wardrobes or stores with him. Sancho, however, took what they gave him, meaning to sell it the first opportunity. The appointed day having arrived, Don Quixote armed himself, and Sancho arrayed himself, and mounted on his Dapple, for he would not give him up though they offered him a horse, he placed himself in the midst of the troop of huntsmen. The Duchess came out splendidly attired, and Don Quixote, in pure courtesy and politeness, held the rein of her palfrey, though the Duke wanted not to allow him. And at last they reached a wood that lay between two high mountains, where, after occupying various posts, ambushes, and paths, and distributing the party in different positions, the hunt began with great noise, shouting and hallooing, so that between the baying of the hounds and the blowing of the horns they could not hear one another. The Duchess dismounted, and with a sharp boar-spear in her hand posted herself where she knew the wild boars were in the habit of passing. The Duke and Don Quixote likewise dismounted, and placed themselves one at each side of her. Sancho took up a position in the rear of all, without dismounting from Dapple, whom he dared not desert, lest some mischief should befall him. Scarcely had they taken their stand in a line with several of their servants, when they saw a huge boar, closely pressed by the hounds and followed by the huntsmen, making towards them, grinding his teeth and tusks and scattering foam from his mouth. As soon as he saw him, Don Quixote, bracing his shield on his arm and drawing his sword, advanced to meet him. The Duke, with boar-spear, did the same, but the Duchess would have gone in front of them all had not the Duke prevented her. Sancho alone, deserting Dapple at the sight of the mighty beast, took to his heels as hard as he could and strove in vain to mount a tall oak. As he was clinging to a branch, however, halfway up in his struggle to reach the top, the bough, such was his ill luck and hard fate, gave way, and caught in his fall by a broken limb of the oak, he hung suspended in the air, unable to reach the ground. Finding himself in this position, and that the green coat was beginning to tear, and reflecting that if the fierce animal came that way he might be able to get at him, he began to utter such cries and call for help so earnestly
that all who heard him and did not see him felt sure he must be in the teeth of some wild beast. In the end, the tusked boar fell, pierced by the blades of the many spears they held in front of him, and Don Quixote, turning round at the cries of Sancho, for he knew by them that it was he, saw him hanging from the oak head downwards, with Dapple, who did not forsake him in his distress, close beside him. And Cide Hamete observes that he seldom saw Sancho Panza without seeing Dapple, or Dapple without seeing Sancho Panza. Such was their attachment and loyalty one to the other. Don Quixote went over and unhooked Sancho, who, as soon as he found himself on the ground, looked at the rent in his hunting coat, and was grieved to the heart, for he thought he had got a patrimonial estate in that suit. Meanwhile, they had slung the mighty boar across the back of a mule, and having covered it with sprigs of rosemary and branches of myrtle, they bore it away as the spoils of victory to some large field tents, which had been pitched in the middle of the wood, where they found the tables laid and dinner served, in such grand and sumptuous style that it was easy to see the rank and magnificence of those who had provided it. Sancho, as he showed the rents in his torn suit to the Duchess, observed, "If we had been hunting hares or after small birds, my coat would have been safe from being in the plight it's in. I don't know what pleasure one can find in lying in wait for an animal that may take your life with his tusk if he gets at you. I recollect having heard an old ballad sung that says, 'By bears be thou devoured, as erst was famous Favila.'
That," said Don Quixote, "was a Gothic king who, going a-hunting, was devoured by a bear."
"Just so," said Sancho, "and I would not have kings and princes expose themselves to such dangers for the sake of a pleasure which, to my mind, ought not to be one, as it consists in killing an animal that has done no harm whatever."
"Quite the contrary, Sancho, you are wrong there," said the Duke. "For hunting is more suitable and requisite for kings and princes than for anybody else. The chase is the emblem of war. It has stratagems, wiles, and crafty devices for overcoming the enemy in safety. In it extreme cold and intolerable heat have to be borne. Indolence and sleep are despised. The bodily powers are invigorated. The limbs of him who engages in it are made supple. And in a word, it is a pursuit which may be followed without injury to anyone and with enjoyment to many. And the best of it is, it is not for everybody, as field sports of other sorts are, except hawking, which also is only for kings and great lords. Reconsider your opinion, therefore, Sancho, and when you are governor, take to hunting, and you will find the good of it."
"Nay," said Sancho, "the good governor should, like a broken leg, keep at home. It would be a nice thing if, after people had been at the trouble of coming to look for him on business, the governor were to be away in the forest enjoying himself. The government would go on badly in that fashion. By my faith, senor, hunting and amusements are more fit for idlers than for governors. What I intend to amuse myself with is playing all fours at Easter time and bowls on Sundays and holidays, for these huntings don't suit my condition or agree with my conscience."
"God grant it may turn out so," said the Duke, "because it's a long step from saying to doing."
"Be that as it may," said Sancho, "pledges don't distress a good payer, and he whom God helps does better than he who gets up early, and it's the belly that carries the feet, not the feet the belly. I mean to say that if God gives me help and I do my duty honestly, no doubt I'll govern better than a gerfalcon. Nay, let them only put a finger in my mouth, and they'll see whether I can bite or not."
"The curse of God and all his saints upon thee, our cursed Sancho," exclaimed Don Quixote. "When will the day come, as I have often said to thee, when I shall hear thee make one single coherent rational remark without proverbs?
Pray, your highnesses, leave this fool alone, for he will grind your souls between, not to say 2, but 2,000 proverbs, dragged in as much in season and as much to the purpose as... May God grant as much health to him, or to me, if I want to listen to them."
"Sancho Panza's proverbs," said the Duchess, "though more in number than the Greek commanders, are not therefore less to be esteemed for the conciseness of the maxims. For my own part, I can say they give me more pleasure than others that may be better brought in and more seasonably introduced." In pleasant conversation of this sort they passed out of the tent into the wood, and the day was spent in visiting some of the posts and hiding-places. And then night closed in, not, however, as brilliantly or tranquilly as might have been expected at the season, for it was then midsummer, but bringing with it a kind of haze that greatly aided the project of the Duke and Duchess. And thus, as night began to fall, and a little after twilight set in, suddenly the whole wood on all four sides seemed to be on fire, and shortly after, here, there, on all sides, a vast number of trumpets and other military instruments were heard, as if several troops of cavalry were passing through the wood.
The blaze of the fire and the noise of the warlike instruments almost blinded the eyes and deafened the ears of those that stood by, and indeed of all who were in the wood. Then there were heard repeated lelilies after the fashion of the Moors when they rushed to battle. Trumpets and clarions brayed, drums beat, fifes played, so unceasingly and so fast that he could not have had any senses who did not lose them with the confused din of so many instruments. The Duke was astounded, the Duchess amazed, Don Quixote wondering, Sancho Panza trembling, and indeed even they who were aware of the cause were frightened. In their fear, silence fell upon them, and a postillion in the guise of a demon passed in front of them, blowing in lieu of a bugle a huge hollow horn that gave out a horrible hoarse note.
"Ho there, brother courier!" cried the Duke. "Who are you? Where are you going? What troops are these that seem to be passing through the wood?"
To which the courier replied in a harsh, discordant voice,
"I am the devil. I am in search of Don Quixote of La Mancha. Those who are coming this way are six troops of enchanters who are bringing on a triumphal car the peerless Dulcinea del Toboso. She comes under enchantment, together with the gallant Frenchman Montesinos, to give instructions to Don Quixote as to how she, the said lady, may be disenchanted."
"If you were the devil, as you say, and as your appearance indicates," said the Duke, "you would have known the said knight Don Quixote of La Mancha, for you have him here before you."
"By God and upon my conscience," said the devil, "I never observed it, for my mind is occupied with so many different things that I was forgetting the main thing I came about."
"This demon must be an honest fellow and a good Christian," said Sancho, "for if he wasn't, he wouldn't swear by God and his conscience. I feel sure now there must be good souls even in hell itself." Without dismounting, the demon then turned to Don Quixote and said,
"The unfortunate but valiant knight Montesinos sends me to thee, the knight of the lions, would that I saw thee in their claws, bidding me tell thee to wait for him wherever I may find thee, as he brings with him her whom they call Dulcinea del Toboso, that he may show thee what is needful in order to disenchant her. And as I came for no more, I need stay no longer. Demons of my sort be with thee, and good angels with these gentles."
And so saying, he blew his huge horn, turned about, and went off, without waiting for a reply from anyone. They all felt fresh wonder, but particularly Sancho and Don Quixote. Sancho to see how, in defiance of the truth, they would have it that Dulcinea was enchanted. Don Quixote because he could not feel sure whether what had happened to him in the cave of Montesinos was true or not. And as he was deep in these cogitations, the Duke said to him,
"Do you mean to wait, Señor Don Quixote?"
"Why not?" replied he. "Here I will wait, fearless and firm, though all hell should come to attack me."
"Well then, if I see another devil or hear another horn like the last, I'll wait here as much as I would in Flanders," said Sancho.
Night now closed in more completely, and many lights began to flit through the wood, just as those fiery exhalations from the earth, that look like shooting stars to our eyes, flit through the heavens. A frightful noise, too, was heard, like that made by the solid wheels the ox-carts usually have, by the harsh, ceaseless creaking of which, they say, the bears and wolves are put to flight if there happen to be any where they are passing. In addition to all this commotion, there came a further disturbance to increase the tumult, for now it seemed as if in truth on all four sides of the wood four encounters or battles were going on at the same time. In one quarter resounded the dull noise of a terrible cannonade, in another numberless muskets were being discharged, the shouts of the combatants sounded almost close at hand, and farther away the Moorish lelilies were raised again and again. In a word, the bugles, the horns, the clarions, the trumpets, the drums, the cannon, the musketry, and above all the tremendous noise of the carts, all made up together a din so confused and terrific that Don Quixote had need to summon up all his courage to brave it. But Sancho's gave way, and he fell fainting on the skirt of the Duchess's robe, who let him lie there and promptly bade them throw water on his face. This was done, and he came to himself by the time that one of the carts with the creaking wheels reached the spot. It was drawn by four plodding oxen, all covered with black housings. On each horn they had fixed a large, lighted wax taper, and on the top of the cart was constructed a raised seat, on which sat a venerable old man, with a beard whiter than the very snow, and so long that it fell below his waist. He was dressed in a long robe of black buckram, for as the cart was thickly set with a multitude of candles, it was easy to make out everything that was on it. Leading it were two hideous demons, also clad in buckram, with countenances so frightful that Sancho, having once seen them, shut his eyes so as not to see them again. As soon as the cart came opposite the spot, the old man rose from his lofty seat, and standing up said in a loud voice,
"I am the sage Lirgandeo,"
and without another word the cart then passed on. Behind it came another of the same form, with another aged man enthroned, who, stopping the cart, said in a voice no less solemn than that of the first,
"I am the sage Alquife, the great friend of Urganda the Unknown,"
and passed on. Then another cart came by at the same pace, but the occupant of the throne was not old like the others, but a man stalwart and robust, and of a forbidding countenance, who, as he came up, said in a voice far hoarser and more devilish,
"I am the enchanter Archelaus, the mortal enemy of Amadis of Gaul and all his kindred,"
and then passed on. Having gone a short distance, the three carts halted, and the monotonous noise of their wheels ceased, and soon after they heard another, not noise, but sound of sweet, harmonious music, of which Sancho was very glad, taking it to be a good sign, and said he to the Duchess, from whom he did not stir a step, or for a single instant, "Senora, where there's music there can't be mischief." "Nor where there are lights and it is bright," said the Duchess, to which Sancho replied, "Fire gives light, and it's bright where there are bonfires, as we see by those that are round us and perhaps may burn us. But music is a sign of mirth and merrymaking."
"That remains to be seen," said Don Quixote, who was listening to all that passed. And he was right, as is shown in the following chapter.
Chapter 35. Wherein is continued the instruction given to Don Quixote touching the disenchantment of Dulcinea, together with other marvellous incidents. They saw advancing towards them, to the sound of this pleasing music, what they call a triumphal car, drawn by 6 grey mules with white linen housings, on each of which was mounted a penitent, robed also in white, with a large lighted wax taper in his hand. The car was twice or perhaps 3 times as large as the former ones, and in front and on the side stood 12 more penitents, all as white as snow and all with lighted tapers, a spectacle to excite fear as well as wonder. And on a raised throne was seated a nymph draped in a multitude of silver tissue veils, with an embroidery of countless gold spangles glittering all over them that made her appear, if not richly, at least brilliantly apparelled. She had her face covered with thin, transparent sendal, the texture of which did not prevent the fair features of a maiden from being distinguished, while the numerous lights made it possible to judge of her beauty and of her years, which seemed to be not less than 17, but not to have yet reached 20. Beside her was a figure in a robe of state, as they call it, reaching to the feet, while the head was covered with a black veil. But the instant the car was opposite the Duke and Duchess and Don Quixote, the music of the clarions ceased, and then that of the lutes and harps on the car. And the figure in the robes rose up, and flinging it apart and removing the veil from its face, disclosed to their eyes the shape of death itself, fleshless and hideous, at which sight Don Quixote felt uneasy, Sancho frightened, and the Duke and Duchess displayed a certain trepidation. Having risen to its feet, this living death, in a sleepy voice and with a tongue hardly awake, held forth as follows.
"I am that Merlin, who the legends say the devil had for a father, and the lie hath gathered credence with the lapse of time. Of magic prince, of Zoroastric lore, monarch and treasurer, with jealous eye I view the efforts of the age to hide the gallant deeds of doughty errant knights, who are and ever have been dear to me. Enchanters and magicians and their kind are mostly hard of heart. Not so am I, for mine is tender, soft, compassionate, and its delight is doing good to all. In the dim caverns of the gloomy Dis, where tracing mystic lines and characters my soul abideth now, there came to me the sorrow-laden plaint of her, the fair, the peerless Dulcinea del Toboso. I knew of her enchantment and her fate, from high-born dame to peasant wench transformed, and, touched with pity, first I turned the leaves of countless volumes of my devilish craft, and then, In this grim, grisly skeleton myself encasing, hither have I come to show where lies the fitting remedy to give relief in such a piteous case. O thou, the pride and pink of all that wear the adamantine steel! O shining light, O beacon, pole star, path and guide of all who, scorning slumber and the lazy down, adopt the toilsome life of blood-stained arms! To thee, great hero who all praise transcends, La Mancha's lustre and Iberia's star, Don Quixote, wise as brave, to thee I say. For peerless Dulcinea del Toboso, her pristine form and beauty to regain, 'tis needful that thy esquire Sancho shall, on his own sturdy buttocks bared to heaven, 3,300 lashes lay, and that they smart and sting and hurt him well. Thus have the authors of her woe resolved. And this is, gentles, wherefore I have come.
"By all that's good," exclaimed Sancho at this, "I'll just as soon give myself 3 stabs with a dagger as 3, not to say 3,000 lashes. The devil take such a way of disenchanting. I don't see what my backside has got to do with enchantments. By God, if Señor Merlin has not found out some other way of disenchanting the Lady Dulcinea del Toboso, she may go to her grave enchanted."
"But I'll take you, Don Clown, stuffed with garlic," said Don Quixote, "and tie you to a tree as naked as when your mother brought you forth, and give you not to say 3,300, but 6,600 lashes, and so well laid on that they won't be got rid of if you try 3,300 times. Don't answer me a word, or I'll tear your soul out."
On hearing this, Merlin said,
"That will not do. For the lashes worthy Sancho has to receive must be given of his own free will, and not by force, and at whatever time he pleases, for there is no fixed limit assigned to him, but it is permitted him, if he likes to commute by half the pain of this whipping, to let them be given by the hand of another, though it may be somewhat weighty."
"Not a hand, my own or anybody else's, weighty or weighable, shall touch me," said Sancho. "Was it I that gave birth to the Lady Dulcinea del Toboso, that my backside is to pay for the sins of her eyes? My master, indeed, that's a part of her, for he's always calling her my life and my soul and his stay and prop, may and ought to whip himself for her, and take all the trouble required for her disenchantment, but for me to whip myself, Abernuncio!"
As soon as Sancho had done speaking, the nymph in silver that was at the side of Merlin's ghost stood up, and removing the thin veil from her face, disclosed one that seemed to all something more than exceedingly beautiful. And with a masculine freedom from embarrassment, and in a voice not very like a lady's, addressing Sancho directly, said,
"Thou wretched squire, soul of a pitcher, heart of a cork tree with bowels of flint and pebbles, if, thou impudent thief, they bade thee throw thyself down from some lofty tower, if, enemy of mankind, they asked thee to swallow a dozen of toads, 2 of lizards, and 3 of adders, if they wanted thee to slay thy wife and children with a sharp, murderous scimitar, it would be no wonder for thee to show thyself stubborn and squeamish. But to make a piece of work about 3,300 lashes, what every poor little charity boy gets every month, it is enough to amaze, astonish, astound the compassionate bowels of all who hear it, nay, all who come to hear it in the course of time. Turn, O miserable, hard-hearted animal, turn, I say, those timorous owl's eyes upon these of mine that are compared to radiant stars, and thou wilt see them weeping trickling streams and rills, and tracing furrows, tracks, and paths over the fair fields of my cheeks. Let it move thee, crafty, ill-conditioned monster, to see my blooming youth, still in its teens, for I am not yet 20, wasting and withering away beneath the husk of a rude peasant wench. And if I do not appear in that shape now, it is a special favour Señor Merlin here has granted me, to the sole end that my beauty may soften thee, for the tears of beauty in distress turn rocks into cotton and tigers into ewes. Lay on to that hide of thine, thou great untamed brute, rouse up thy lusty vigour that only urges thee to eat and eat, and set free the softness of my flesh, the gentleness of my nature, and the fairness of my face. And if thou wilt not relent or come to reason for me, do so for the sake of that poor knight thou hast beside thee, thy master, I mean, whose soul I can this moment see, how he has it stuck in his throat not 10 fingers from his lips, and only waiting for thy inflexible or yielding reply to make its escape by his mouth or go back again into his stomach.
Don Quixote, on hearing this, felt his throat, and turning to the duke, he said,
By God, Señor Dulcinea says true, I have my soul stuck here in my throat, like the nut of a crossbow.
What say you to this, Sancho? Said the duchess.
I say, Señora, returned Sancho, what I said before. As for the lashes, abernuncio.
Abrenuncio, you should say, Sancho, and not as you do, said the duke.
Let me alone, your highness, said Sancho. I'm not in a humour now to look into niceties or a letter more or less. For these lashes that are to be given me, or I'm to give myself, have so upset me that I don't know what I'm saying or doing. But I'd like to know of this lady, my lady Dulcinea del Toboso, where she learned this way she has of asking favours. She comes to ask me to score my flesh with lashes, and she calls me soul of a pitcher, and great untamed brute, and a string of foul names that the devil is welcome to. Is my flesh brass, or is it anything to me whether she is enchanted or not? Does she bring with her a basket of fair linen, shirts, kerchiefs, socks, not that I wear any, to coax me? No, nothing but one piece of abuse after another, though she knows the proverb they have here that an ass loaded with gold goes lightly up a mountain, and that gifts break rocks, and praying to God and plying the hammer, and that one take is better than two, I'll give these. Then there's my master, who ought to stroke me down and pet me to make me turn wool and carded cotton. He says if he gets hold of me, he'll tie me naked to a tree and double the tail of lashes on me. These tender-hearted gentry should consider that it's not merely a squire, but a governor they are asking to whip himself, just as if it was have a drink with your cherries. Let them learn, plague take them, the right way to ask and beg and behave themselves, for all times are not alike, nor are people always in good humour. I'm now ready to burst with grief at seeing my green coat torn, and they come to ask me to whip myself of my own free will, I having as little fancy for it as for turning red Indian.
Well, then, the fact is, friend Sancho, said the duke, that unless you become softer than a ripe fig, you shall not get hold of the government. It would be a nice thing for me to send my island as a cruel governor with flinty bowels, who won't yield to the tears of afflicted damsels or to the prayers of wise, magisterial, ancient enchanters and sages. In short, Sancho, either you must be whipped by yourself, or they must whip you, or you shan't be governor.
Señor, said Sancho, won't 2 days' grace be given me in which to consider what is best for me?
No, certainly not, said Merlin. Here, this minute and on the spot, the matter must be settled. Either Dulcinea will return to the cave of Montesinos and to her former condition of peasant wench, or else in her present form shall be carried to the Elysian fields, where she will remain waiting until the number of stripes is completed.
Now then, Sancho, said the duchess, show courage and gratitude for your master Don Quixote's bread that you have eaten. We are all bound to oblige and please him for his benevolent disposition and lofty chivalry. Consent to this whipping, my son, to the devil with the devil, and leave fear to milksops, for a stout heart breaks bad luck, as you very well know.
To this Sancho replied with an irrelevant remark, which, addressing Merlin, he made to him,
Will your worship tell me, Señor Merlin, when that courier devil came up, he gave my master a message from Señor Montesinos, charging him to wait for him here, as he was coming to arrange how the lady Doña Dulcinea del Toboso was to be disenchanted. But up to the present we have not seen Montesinos nor anything like him.
To which Merlin made answer, The devil, Sancho, is a blockhead and a great scoundrel. I sent him to look for your master, but not with a message from Montesinos, but from myself. For Montesinos is in his cave expecting, or more properly speaking, waiting for his disenchantment. For there's the tail to be skinned yet for him. If he owes you anything or you have any business to transact with him, I'll bring him to you and put him where you choose. But for the present, make up your mind to consent to this penance, and believe me, it will be very good for you, for soul as well as for body. For your soul, because of the charity with which you perform it, and for your body, because I know that you are of a sanguine habit, and it will do you no harm to draw a little blood.
There are a great many doctors in the world. Even the enchanters are doctors, said Sancho.
However, as everybody tells me the same thing, though I can't see it myself, I say I am willing to give myself the 3,300 lashes, provided I am to lay them on whenever I like, without any fixing of days or times. And I'll try and get out of debt as quickly as I can, that the world may enjoy the beauty of the Lady Dulcinea del Toboso. As it seems, contrary to what I thought, that she is beautiful after all. It must be a condition, too, that I am not to be bound to draw blood with the scourge, and that if any of the lashes happen to be fly-flappers, they are to count. Item, that in case I should make any mistake in the reckoning, Señor Merlin, as he knows everything, is to keep count, and let me know how many are still wanting or over the number.
"There will be no need to let you know of any over," said Merlin, "because when you reach the full number, the Lady Dulcinea will at once, and that very instant, be disenchanted, and will come in her gratitude to seek out the worthy Sancho, and thank him, and even reward him for the good work. So you have no cause to be uneasy about stripes too many or too few. Heaven forbid I should cheat anyone of even a hair of his head."
"Well, then, in God's hands be it," said Sancho. "In the hard case I'm in, I give in. I say I accept the penance on the conditions laid down."
The instant Sancho uttered these last words, the music of the clarion struck up once more, and again a host of muskets were discharged, and Don Quixote hung on Sancho's neck, kissing him again and again on the forehead and cheeks. The Duchess and the Duke expressed the greatest satisfaction. The car began to move on, and as it passed, the fair Dulcinea bowed to the Duke and Duchess, and made a low curtsy to Sancho. And now bright, smiling dawn came on apace. The flowers of the field revived raised up their heads, and the crystal waters of the brooks, murmuring over the grey and white pebbles, hastened to pay their tribute to the expectant rivers. The glad earth, the unclouded sky, the fresh breeze, the clear light, each and all showed that the day that came treading on the skirts of morning would be calm and bright. The Duke and Duchess, pleased with their hunt and at having carried out their plan so cleverly and successfully, returned to their castle resolved to follow up their joke. For to them, there was no reality that could afford them more amusement. Chapter 36. Wherein is related the strange and undreamt-of adventure of the distressed duenna, alias the Countess Trifaldi, together with a letter which Sancho Panza wrote to his wife, Teresa Panza. The Duke had a majordomo of a very facetious and sportive turn, and he it was that played the part of Merlin, made all the arrangements for the late adventure, composed the verses, and got a page to represent Dulcinea. And now, with the assistance of his master and mistress, he got up another of the drollest and strangest contrivances that can be imagined. The Duchess asked Sancho the next day if he had made a beginning with his penance task which he had to perform for the disenchantment of Dulcinea. He said he had, and had given himself 5 lashes overnight. The Duchess asked him what he had given them with. He said with his hand. "That," said the Duchess, "is more like giving oneself slaps than lashes. I am sure the sage Merlin will not be satisfied with such tenderness. Worthy Sancho must make a scourge with claws, or a cat-o'-nine-tails, that will make itself felt, for it's with blood that learning enters, and the release of so great a lady as Dulcinea will not be granted so cheaply, or at such a paltry price. And remember, Sancho, that works of charity done in a lukewarm and half-hearted way are without merit and of no avail." To which Sancho replied, "If your ladyship will give me a proper scourge or cord, I'll lay on with it, provided it does not hurt too much. For you must know, boor as I am, my flesh is more cotton than hemp, and it won't do for me to destroy myself for the good of anybody else." "So be it by all means," said the Duchess. "Tomorrow I'll give you a scourge that will be just the thing for you, and will accommodate itself to the tenderness of your flesh, as if it was its own sister." Then said Sancho, "Your Highness must know, dear lady of my soul, that I have a letter written to my wife, Teresa Panza, giving her an account of all that has happened to me since I left her. I have it here in my bosom, and there's nothing wanting but to put the address to it. I'd be glad if your discretion would read it,
for I think it runs in the governor's style. I mean, the way governors ought to write.
And who dictated it? Asked the Duchess.
Who should have dictated it but myself, sinner as I am, said Sancho.
And did you write it yourself? Said the Duchess.
That I didn't, said Sancho, for I can neither read nor write, though I can sign my name.
Let us see it, said the Duchess, for never fear but you display in it the quality and quantity of your wit.
Sancho drew out an open letter from his bosom, and the Duchess, taking it, found it ran in this fashion. Sancho Panza's letter to his wife, Teresa Panza. If I was